a very special little episode of Muxies today. So as we've mentioned many, many times, when we were in the UK for the Clash GT, the lovely Aussie Walter, and basically since Clash, I've been asking him to come on the podcast, and he said no. And finally, Walt, we've got you on. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'm sure I didn't say no. I said maybe.
No, you just avoided the question.
That's
every
true.
Single time.
Yeah, I did. I avoided the question. Hey, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm really looking forward to having a chat with you tonight. Or, well, this morning for you, but tonight for me.
Yeah, now. And yep. Well, before I forget to mention it, you've got a beautiful looking case of miniatures sitting right behind you. I can't quite see from here, but it looks very nice.
Oh, okay. Right. Interesting that you can see all of that. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the dear listener can't. And that's we often, with this being a podcast, we often get ourselves in trouble where Steve Hildrew will, you know, lift up the model he's painting. No, the listeners still can't hear it, Steve. Stop doing that. Still can't see them for the models. But there we go. It's part of the fun. It's part of the mup charm that we don't edit out.
It's
there
a little bit
go.
Like newsreaders, right? Apparently not wearing trousers, right? Yep.
Oh, yep. Did you hear about this recently? It was just this month in the UK. Did you hear what happened?
No, go
so
on.
A BBC news presenter, she stuck her, apologies dear listener, she stuck her middle finger up at the crew. They were just having a laugh, right? And she obviously she didn't realise the recording had started. Yeah. And so, you know, a load of people on the internet and the media, you know, clutch their pearls like Victorian women and swoon and go, oh, what will happen to the children? And get very upset about this, which is just a very normal thing that normal everyday people do all the time.
Look, I'm sure each and every one of us, including those who are listening, can think of at least one moment where they've embarrassed themselves, right? Yep.
I don't know what you're talking about, Walt. Me, never. Never on this podcast every single day. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Walt, sorry, my voice is going strange. So, Walt, so do you want to introduce yourself and your background to gaming?
Yeah, sure, no problems. I'll try and keep it short because I'm a little bit long in the tooth. Look, I started gaming in the last century, right? Yeah, and I basically consumed a lot of fantasy and sci-fi novels, and I think they were the standard ones that everybody else did.
Well, sorry, Walt, just come on, let's do it. What was the first thing that got you in? Do you remember?
I mean, there's obviously Tolkien, right? Yeah, but, you know, Sword of Shannara and, you know, I don't know if that even makes sense, you know. The Golden Talk, you know. There was lots of good novels out there.
But crucially, it was stories. It was fantasy stories, yeah, by fantasy, the sound of it.
And also science fiction as well, yeah. But, you know, I'm going to reflect back here a little bit on history. There wasn't much around for fantasy sci-fi players in those days, right? And back then, I'm hopefully not dating myself too much, it came down to Dungeons and Dragons and swords and sorcery and hack and slash. And it basically was RPG with a dungeon master, a pencil, a piece of paper, and you rolled a character.
And your imagination.
And your imagination took, got you gaming. And look, it's interesting, you know, I reflected back today on that, getting ready for this chat. And, you know, a lot of people possibly don't remember this, but then Citadel started making miniatures for RPG games. Yeah. They're not, in fact, I'm just going to hold one up here. The listeners can't see it. But, I mean, here's one of them. I've still got, one of the very
beautiful
early
old
copies.
Books.
Yeah.
It's beautiful artwork, though.
Yeah.
But I don't know how old you are when you saw that, but your brain must have exploded.
Absolutely.
Because it wouldn't have been a common thing. Oh, what's this? Yeah. Wargaming.
And, you know, and it says Warhammer, the mass combat fantasy role-playing game. With miniatures, right? Okay, so that was the start of it. And, of course, got me into Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. It was a dark world, John Blanche art, you know, I think, which we most of us can recall. And the rest of that is history. And it's essentially the story that I keep hearing from people when they come on the podcast, your podcast, we've all moved through Warhammer 40K, and we've come out the other end and we're doing something different, right? And today I'm going to share some of that with you as well.
Fantastic. And Walt, legendarily now, because we've mentioned it many, many times, as have other people, you came all the way from Australia to come to Clash of Kings. Yeah. And what was the, you know, obviously that's a heck of a trip. And initially you weren't even planning on playing. You just wanted to come and have a look at, see what was happening.
Yeah.
I'm sure a few things all convalesce. That's not the right word. a few things came together. Let's keep it simple, Chris. Sorry. Yeah. but maybe you could talk a little bit about how that all came together.
Yeah, sure. No problems. Look, what brought me to
coalesced. Sorry. I'll put myself back on mute. Coalesced. That's what I meant. Not convalesced.
Yeah, well. My miniatures were in a bit of a lost in a void for many, many years, right? And I had no desire to get back into GW tabletop gaming, and for reasons that are going to come up, yeah. And then, you know, I was standing in a paddock, yeah, a dry paddock, looking at some sheep, as we Australians tend to do. And all of a sudden, these guys on Mantic Universe podcast, Mark Zielinski and Chris and Steve Hildreau are talking about this upcoming Clash of Kings. And I went, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. And I remember Mark saying, you know, I'm going to go there from the United States and it's not about winning. And in fact, I'm not that great a player. And you guys are going, yeah, we're not great either. And he said, I'm going to go over there just to have fun. And if you're coming over, yeah, introduce yourself, say hi. And I thought to myself, well, why don't I go? And then I thought to myself, you know, that's a big call, right? Yeah. And I spoke to my wife and she said, go, just do it. And so I rang up Steve. I sent him an email. I said, hey, Steve, my name's such and such. And hey, I believe there's a convention, tournament on, and I'd like to come over and have a bit of a chat. And he said, chat? Have a look. No way. Come over and play. And I went, mate, I haven't got an army. And I really, you know, I've got the book, but I really haven't got a clue how to play. And look, I have tasted and I've been to tournaments in my younger years here in Australia. Moab, which was mother of all battles, and DogCon and CanCon. And for reasons that will become clearer later on in the program, I stopped going, right? But this sounded like a different tournament altogether. And I thought, geez, these guys, right? I'm going to do this. So, yeah, I went back to Steve and I said, oh, I don't know about playing. He said, no, it's done. We've got a loan army for you. Bob's going to loan you an army. What flavor do you want? Come on down. And look, the rest is history.
And what was the sense of relief on that Friday night when it was incredibly sweaty in Mantic, and you played your first game of Kings of War, and you went, thank God this is a good game.
Well, look, I scared myself, right? Yeah, because I committed to this, and then I think it was you who said there's a gaming club in Canberra. Yeah, get in contact with these guys. Yeah, yep. So I did. Yeah, and there was a lovely young man, Jats is his name, and I said, Jats, mate, I'm going to go over. I'm going to make a big fool of myself because I have no idea. So he invited me over to one of the gaming nights, and using ambush, he showed me some tips and tricks, etc. You know, and it all made sense at that point in time. I walked out 10 minutes later, it was all gone because, yeah, you know, it made no sense at all. And in fact, I remember on the plane, I was reading the rule book, right, going, God, must remember this, must remember that. So it was a lot of fun. And then at Mantic Universe, of course, you know, all these guys are there, yeah. Men and women are there. And, What an atmosphere. How great was that, you know? And before you knew it, there were, I don't know, 14, 15 people at a table playing. It was great.
And you get such a mix. There are really competitive players there. But basically what will happen is you come in, you play a complete random person, you probably lose your first game. This year, I made the mistake of beating Mark. That was my biggest mistake because that put me up quite high up the pairing. So then for the rest of the weekend, I was playing against good players, which was, you know, obviously for me, that was a terrible, terrible mistake. I only won one more game. Got a draw, got a creditable draw against Forces of Nature. Yeah. But it was a brilliant experience. And but normally what happens is you, whether you win or you lose, you end up with like-minded people like yourselves, and then you meet brilliant people and just have a fabulous time. You know, you just have a wonderful, wonderful time. Brilliant. And you played ogres tournament. You played ogres for your first tournament. What did you think of the army?
I thought it was great. I looked at the book and I thought I'm going to have to choose a very simple army, right? That's something that gels also with a narrative gamer like me. And I thought it can't be simpler than Ogre Kingdoms because, let's face it, they're just going to go over to the other side of the board and smack somebody. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, push them up the table. Yeah, push them forward and try and smack someone. Yeah,
I don't have to. With elves and all the other races, I'd have to get too fancy. And I had no time and no bandwidth for that because I didn't know enough of the rules. So I thought Ogre Kingdoms it is. And in fact, I remember Steve Hildrew talking on one of the podcasts a couple of months back, and he said, I think he commented that he got a list from me, an army list, and he said it was very, very scary list, right?
Yeah. He described your list as filthy.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I don't think that was your intention at all.
No,
but
no,
if you're looking at this completely, you know, from a position of utter, you know, the opposite of knowledge, why not?
So, you know, Steve, if you're listening, mate, what happened was I went on the internet and I looked for an Ogre Kingdoms army list, right, that had as the minimal amount of different units in it. So there was this thing with lots of fanatics in it, right? That was it, fanatics, right? And I thought, okay, 2,300 points, these are going to go across the board, don't have to worry too much about tactics. They'll smack somebody, I may lose it, that's okay. And for me as a narrative player, it made sense, right? Yeah, okay, I'll just want to go over there and just punch somebody up. And because Steve thinks that I, the way it came across in the last couple of podcasts, it sounded like I'd engineered this army list, right, to win the tournament, and I was nowhere near.
Some months ago we ran a dead zone event, like a 10-person dead zone event, and I was telling everyone it's not a competitive event, it's a narrative event. And I brought a faction called the Nameless, and I just made a list up, you know, I don't even play that often, right? And I think it was about my third game ever with the Nameless, and one of the people there is a member of the rules committee, and he looked at my army in the first game playing against my opponent, and he just leaned over and he whispered, "Filthy." Is it? Oh. And then I proceeded to win all my games, you know, against people I'd assured this is just a narrative event, which,
oops,
I'll be honest, it doesn't look great. I was trying to win my games, but I wasn't aware it was
It was great. The Ogre Kingdoms playing them was great. Bob's army was beautifully painted, which as a narrative player really appealed to me. And yeah, look, I got the hang of it and even won a game. So there you go.
Fantastic. Yeah. Who was the game you won? Come on, let's lean into that a little bit.
Okay.
I won two games,
right? That's it.
Yes, perfect. Yeah. That's 2 out of 6. I won 2 games. I drew 1, but I won 2. You know, that's, I mean, to be honest, winning 2 games at the tournament, that's my aim, though, to be honest.
Oh, is it?
If I could win... going into I think this Clash of Kings, I won 2 games on the first day, and then I was talking to the Irish guys in the evening, and they were saying, oh, you know, because I told them, yeah, you know, I've already hit my aim, you know, and they were saying, ah, you know, win one more, win 3 games. I was like, okay, you know, all right, I'm into this now. But at a tournament, normally about 5 game, but you know, 6 game as well. If I can win 2 games, I haven't embarrassed myself.
Honestly, it didn't matter to me. It didn't matter to me. I was having so much fun, you know.
But it is nice to win one, though, isn't it? It is nice. You know, it doesn't really.
It surprised me because Ronnie, right, on the first day, when we were at the Mantic Open day the day before, he said to me, he said, I'll bet you a beer that you'll win a game. And I said, I'll take that bet. So I still owe Ronnie a beer. So, Ronnie, if you're listening, I'm good for it.
fantastic. But it's that says an awful lot that the owner of the company is betting you a beer that you'll win a game. You know, you don't get that with many companies these days.
Absolutely not.
It's just the whole thing feels different. And I still think the best thing Mantic ever did was give the game the rules of the game, trust the RC, the rules committees with it. Because, you know, if you look back on first edition rules, you know, it was very important and an important part of the history of Mantic, but their rules look very janky, you know. Yeah. I think there was something like the Sword of Umbra, the rules for that. It was very Warhammer, so it was kind of, I think there was a Twilight Kin hero that if you did any damage at all, you roll a D6, and if you roll a 4 up, whatever that unit is, a giant, a dragon, it's just dead.
You know,
it seems powerful.
So there's a couple of other things that I really found great at Clash of Kings. I don't know if we've got a couple of minutes to get into that.
Yeah, go for it. Well,
before we move on to the real subject of
this, as I said before we started recording, the time just goes. You know, it's just we're just talking about toy soldiers, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got to say this because it was a great event. Yeah. Okay. So it had a great vibe. There were people from everywhere, experienced and inexperienced players. Right. And even before I got there, you know, I'm going to get a bit gushy here, right? You know, like Bob loaning me his Ogre Kingdom army. I mean, who does that, right? How good is that, right? And I was adopted by the Austrian team, even though they knew that I didn't have a clue on how to play. So they adopted me. So Patrick and Stefan and Martin, danke schön, gut gemacht. There you go. And,
Nick so gut gemacht.
Yeah, gut gemacht. And, you know, and then, you know, there was Chris Pudney, you know, he ended up being my tour guide while I was over there. He's an Australian wandering around Nottingham, not having a clue. So he took me to Warhammer World and Warlords or whatever. Heather and Delboy, you know, fantastic people, good humour, enthusiasm. Great to really catch up with them and share the hobby. And then, of course, there's Clem and Mike and, you know, and yourself, you know. So, and I drank way too much beer. So let me just say that. Probably the last thing I'll probably say about that was it was a 5-star tournament. I've been to others before, but this really was 5-star, right? The layout, the scenery. Scenery wasn't just dropped on tables. It was thought through. Table layout's fantastic. That side table is gold. The program that was put together, you know, and I knew, right, I got to say this before, I knew I hit the jackpot, Chris, when I played against my first opponent. And that was young Tim Croft, right, with his Night Stalkers. Yeah, and he had created this Night Stalker army based on the Garden of Unearthly Delights from the medieval Hieronymus Bosch, right? Yeah, the painter. Yeah, the Brabant painter in the 1400s, right? That there's that scene there of hell and all that sort of stuff. And that army, and I thought to myself, wow, right? As a narrative gamer.
I'm in the right place. Yeah,
I am in the right place.
Oh, incredible. Yeah, fantastic. And I bet a lot of people wouldn't have noticed that, you know? It's just amazing.
I don't know. A lot of people noticed Tim's army. It was stunning.
It really was. I think I remember seeing it. And I think at a lot of tournaments, particularly ones with so many tables, 75 tables or whatever it was, I think you can see where they started putting terrain and there'll be these beautiful tables. Yeah. And then you can see the point at which they go, oh, flip, I'm not sure we've got enough terrain. Or, you know, you're getting the B or the C list terrain where they've just asked their friends, have we got a bit more? But at Clash of Kings, it wasn't the case.
No, it wasn't that at all. No, not at all. It was perfect.
A little bit, I'm sure he won't mind me saying it, he's a little bit sort of, I don't know if it's OCD or something like that, but Steve's very intense. So if he's doing something, he's really committing to it and doing
it. Well, you know, Clash of Kings 24 is booked out, right? Don't need to say more. There's a reason for
it. Yeah. One of the big reasons I bought a ticket, because we were messaging, it was quite late. So it sold out basically on day one, right?
Yeah.
And there's more tickets coming on sale in January, I believe, dear listener. But one of the big reasons I booked, because actually I'd had a conversation with Clem in the morning, and we're like, well, maybe we skip this one and come back next year. But then I heard Mark was had bought a ticket. You'd bought a ticket. And oh, bloody hell! I don't want to miss. I don't want to miss it. So, and I Clem's not coming, or he might change his mind with the new tickets coming on sale. But I'm actually, funnily enough, I invited a very good friend of mine. We've been Chris, who you'll get to meet soon. Well, we've been friends since we're about 8 years old, and he's played a couple of games of Ambush with me. He's played a couple of games of Dead Zone with me. But he's not not really a gamer, but I sort of sold it to him as this is just a really fun weekend. It doesn't matter if you know the rules. Doesn't matter. You know, it really, really doesn't, right? You forget things. Yeah. Exactly. Have a beer and have a lovely old time with some lovely people. Super. Anyway, so let's bring it back then. So when did you start narrative wargaming or narrative gaming?
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe I should actually try and give you my idea what narrative gaming is. So there are different takes on this, but this is mine, right? The game that I enjoy most on the tabletop is when I combine storytelling with miniature wargaming, right? So there's a key word in there, storytelling, right? So it becomes less about winning and losing, and it's really more about enjoying the experience and the storyline and breathing life into your army and giving it a personality with strengths and weaknesses, right? And answering the question of why does it even exist? Why is it even on the tabletop, right? Yeah. So it's probably helpful to go back to the roots of some of that narrative gaming, because I think all players that are playing Mantic games are narrative players to some extent. They may not know it. They may not call themselves that, but I think they are, right? Or else if they weren't, they'd be playing chess or Uno.
Totally. Right? It's a bit like – it's because I think both of us would say, no, we're not competitive gamers. But to a certain point, we are, because, of course, when we're playing the game, we're trying to win the game, right?
Yep.
It may not be the most important thing to us, but I can't lie. When I'm playing that game and it's really close and I'm rolling to win the game, I really, really, really want to win that game, right?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. So what I said before about RPG, I mean, let's face it, that's where the miniature tabletop fantasy game is. That's the roots of it all. That's where it's come from, RPG. And really, RPG is about storytelling and immersing yourself into that story. Now, there are different types of RPGs, of course. There are people that are involved in reenactment groups, for instance. There's live-action role-playing, dressing up as a Viking. There's dungeon masters taking people through dungeon crawls, pen and paper. There's board games. There's even online massive multiplayer games like World of Warcraft. And in fact, I don't know if you remember this, as a narrative gamer, and this answers the question of where did I start, you may recall there was a set of, this was going back in 1982, fighting fantasy books by Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone.
Oh, I used
you remember
to love
those?
Them. Yeah. So firstly, I was born in that year. And secondly, they were green. The fighting fantasy. Yeah. No, but I remember I used to read them on long car journeys and things like that. I used to love them. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great things like, I'm just going to make it up, right? I'll just pull it out of the air. Yeah. Hey, Chris. Yeah. It's been a bad night. You've fallen off the cart. You went to the tavern. You wake up. You're only inches away from the sewer. And you look up, and there's this beggar with no teeth, right? Yeah, grinning at you with a yellow coin twiddling between his fingers. Also looking at you is a white steed across the laneway. It looks familiar to you. It's shimmering, but you're not quite sure why. And as you look over to the left, there's the sentry at the gate looking at you, trying to figure out whether they should arrest you or not. Of course, you could always go back to the tavern, and see if you can actually get some sort of compensation for the loss that you've incurred. What would you like to do?
Well, how did you know what I was up to last night? I've got to explore the Shimmering Horse. May be a trap, there you go. But, I've got to explore
the Shimmering Horse. And that was fighting fantasy books, right? Yeah. So you've decided to go talk to the Shimmering Horse. Well, the answer is turn to page 82. Right, and page 82, we're going to take you on to the next thing, and next thing, and next thing, right? And that's what fighting fantasy was. You had no dice, right? You didn't have to create a character. You were reading a book, but it was taking you through a storyline. And that's how I started with narrative gaming. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. I love that. I really treasure it.
Why would you talk to a shimmering horse, by the way?
Well, it's shimmering. Well, I mean, you know, that's funny. I mean, it may just be the ale we had last night, but, you know, it that feels significant. You know, yeah. I want to avoid the creepy bloke, you know, hovering over me. I've probably had enough to drink, so probably don't go back to the tavern, you know. No. So the shimmering
horse. Turn to page 21 for for that outcome. it's not good.
Spoiler alert. Oh, okay. I want to read this imaginary fighting fantasy book now. I wonder what happened to that. I mean, I guess they don't make them anymore, but I'd be interested to see what happened.
Yeah, I'd be interested to find it as well.
But it just gets your imagination firing, doesn't it? Yeah. And super well. So do we think there are different types of gamers out there?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's there's the Gantt chart or something, and maybe people prioritize different things.
Yeah.
Maybe we're all to some extent, because we said earlier, right, you and I, we don't think of ourselves as competitive gamers, but we are playing a competitive game. So there must be some element, but it's probably far further down our list.
Yeah, look, my opinion, right, okay, so, you know, don't hold my podcast responsible for anything I say, dear listener. Look,
to be fair, if the dear listener is holding MUP podcast responsible for anything, it's very much on them, you know. Listen to our back catalogue and
yeah, look, of course there are different types of gamers out there, and, you know, believe it or not, there is actually some really interesting research on this, right? Yeah. So, because let's face it, the people that are in the business of games and gamification, it makes a lot of sense to understand what players like and the psychology of players. So people have actually done a study on this. So I actually read up on this a little bit, and I actually like what they came up with. So there's a fellow by the name of Richard Bartle who breaks up the way people play the games into four categories, right? And I like his description. And what he says is, yeah, look, people will tend to have traits in more than one of these categories, but they will tend to dominate in one of them. So I just want to share what they are. So he talks about the achiever. So the achiever is all about points and status. And, you know, they want to be able to show their friends that they're progressing, they're doing well, etc. And he's saying the achievers, they make up about 10% of the player community. And then he talks about explorers. And these are the people who want to see things and new things, discover new secrets. They're not very bothered about, you know, points or, you know, moving up the table or whatever it is. For them, the discovery is the thing, right? Yeah. And they really, they enjoy the surprise that comes out of the game. So that's me. That's a narrative gamer, right? Yeah. I would want to see how the game develops. And he says, look, there's about 10% of players that fit into that category. And then he talks about the socializers, who experience fun in their games through interacting with other players. Yep, so night out, let's have some fun. And he reckons they're the majority, that's about 80%. And this last category, this is going to be a little bit controversial, he calls them the killers, right? Yeah. So sounds a bit harsh, but I reckon nonetheless valid, right? Killers are similar to achievers because they want to get a thrill from gaming points and winning status and all that sort of stuff. But what sets them apart from the achievers is that the killers actually want to see other people lose, right? They're highly
It's not a positive. It's not I feel better. It's I made someone feel worse.
They're highly competitive, and winning is what motivates them. That's it, right? So, and I've got to say, when we meet other players, we all subconsciously make a judgment whether we want to game with them again. Yeah, we do. Yeah. And it's only natural. And I actually, I shouldn't do it, but I do. I actually use the four suits of a card game, right? Yeah, hearts, diamonds, and all that sort of stuff. And for me, I classify achievers as the diamond trump, right? Yeah, they're out there. Yeah, trying to build points and move up ladders and whatever.
Love it.
And the hearts are really about spending time with other people, having fun games, right? And then there's the spades. That's me. Yeah, spades are about digging further. Yeah, digging further. Yeah, what's this story about and all that sort of stuff?
When Aussie infantrymen called diggers. Wasn't that slang, Aussie slang for an infantryman?
That's
Aussie slang.
I think there's a digger. Well, they're still called diggers, yeah. It goes back to World War One, Gallipoli, and then even before.
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And
as we know, Aussies don't like to talk about Gallipoli, so we'll move on. Yeah.
No comment. And then the killers, the suit that I associated with are the clubs, right? They're the ones out there with the clubs. Right, so I reckon I'm a spade mostly. So yeah, there are different types of gamers. Look, sometimes you know, social gaming would be the thing for me, but really I'm a spade at heart, right? Yeah, so you will move out of those zones. But for people who are 100% killers all the time, for a narrative gamer like me, they're hard work.
Do you think the community needs the killers?
Oh, gee, don't put me on the spot.
You've done some brilliant.
I don't know. I can't judge that. You know, I think everybody's. There are some really competitive people in all sorts of things in life. Yeah, yeah.
This is Fred reminding you to visit the Kings of War Forum, KOWForum.com. No ads, no commercials. That's KOWForum.com.
I wonder if it in some way, I mean, we're not, I mean, we go to tournaments, but I wouldn't think of us as big tournament players necessarily. Yeah. But I wonder if the tournament community needs those kind of, you know, possibly, baby seal clubbers, yeah, maybe to drive it forward, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't mean anything derogatory by it. I'm just quoting his work, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can see those players most of the time fitting into those categories.
What I'm thinking of, if I'm honest, is, you know, if you go to a gaming club or a shop, it definitely was the case when I was trying to play 40K. Sometimes there would be a local sitting there with their army, and, you know, they'll offer people a game that they know, and the people say, oh, no, thank you, I'm just waiting for someone.
Yeah.
There's someone that will struggle to get a game in their club or their shop or whatever, and then, you know, they'll... You know, for example, I'll turn up and go, sure, I'll play a game, and then they'll shoot me off the table, and then I'll go, oh, okay, all right, that, you know, and they'll go back to sitting for the next victim. yeah, maybe that's the, as you said, but that was, I really like that. I'm probably hearts, I guess.
Yeah.
I would say so. I love narrative gaming too, but I probably hearts. And just while I think about it, well, this is changing the subject slightly, but we're talking about building story and narrative, being a narrative gamer. What I think is absolutely beautiful about it is, you know, you'll have a game where, let's say, for example, your standard bearer runs out and does a wound on a dragon to ground it.
Yeah.
And then forever on, that your standard bearer was the hero that in that moment just ran out and faced a dragon, maybe trying to stab it with the legendary standard bearer.
Yeah.
And so these things, you're building narrative on narrative on narrative, yeah, right? So it gets more and more and more rewarding.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, you talk about standard bearers and leaders and things like that. A narrative player will, because they've got history associated with them, right? They've got legends attached to them. You don't want to put them in the front line. You just don't. You don't want to lose them, right? Yeah. But the tactics in Kings of War, yeah, an individual is actually a caddy for, I don't know, inspiring something or flying in the back lines. And if they die, it's no big deal. So, yeah. So it took me a while to go, you need to think about this a little bit different when you're playing in a tournament game, right?
Let's say, for example, you have a hero model, whatever it might be. In a game of Kings of War, the hero model dies. In my head canon, they're not dead. They were defeated. Maybe they were stabbed, right, and they went down.
All right.
So they, in my mind, I'm not, you know, because otherwise it would just be after every battle, I'd be having to replace everybody every single time, and that you wouldn't have that continuity necessarily. Yeah. I mean, you could do, for example, you know, if you're playing GCPS or something, you could do, or if you're playing Basilia or something like that, you could have maybe the history of the regiment. So maybe you could look at it. If an army has a particularly high attrition rate, you could look at it from a higher level, you know, almost the history of the regiment rather than the individuals. But
I'm just making the point, you get, you know, a narrative player will get attached to their figures, right? Yeah. Because there's more invested in it.
Of course, emotionally as well as time and all the rest of it.
You've painted
probably
them special.
Lovingly painting them.
Yeah, exactly right. That's exactly right.
Super. And so what does narrative gaming offer that other play styles or approaches don't?
In a nutshell, I think narrative gaming gives you a reason to keep going with an army and to keep developing it further. It's a constant work in progress, right? It's not a build an army, play it once, put it in the cupboard, never play it again. It's not one
it's
of those situations. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
And look, also, it's a play style that for new players, it's exciting from the get-go, right? The minute you put a story out there that captures their imagination, yeah, they want to play the game, right? Yeah. So they don't need to learn the rules necessarily. So when I have a game with my wife, Karen, she doesn't want to learn the game rules, but she loves the background, right? And the dice rolls are just incidental. And by the way, last time we played, she beat me, right? And she hasn't got a clue how to, even worse than me, she hasn't got a clue how to play Kings of War. She just goes, what do I need to roll now? Five dice, darling. Okay, five sixes. You win.
Well, to be fair, games are very easy if you only roll sixes.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Fantastic. But yeah, no, but it's you're getting, she's enjoying something in her own way. She knows what's important to her and she's enjoying it in her own way.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters, really, that we're enjoying this stuff, right?
So people
can get different things from it, but the important thing is we identify for us what's important and why. And did I actually ask the question, Walt? What makes narrative gaming attractive to you?
It's just another part of the gaming experience for me, right? There are people out there that love modeling stuff, right? They love the modeling side. Some people are really attracted by the painting side. Some are attracted by the playing side. Well, I'm just adding the storyline to it. And by me adding the storyline up front, it explains actually why they're on the table, but it also helps me do the other three. How do I paint them? What is the terrain I model? Yeah, to game with them. What sort of games do I play? Yeah, skirmish games or, you know, large confrontations? What do I do? So, yeah, that's what makes it attractive to me. That's why I like narrative gaming. It's the thing that pushes the other three.
I always find if it's, let's say, for example, you have a pickup game or something like this, and it might be, let's say, in our example, this is a completely imaginary example. We have, you know, you meet someone who's a Ratkin player and you're, let's say, a Basilian player. And there's these two massive armies with dragons and kings and heroes and leaders on the table. And you might have, you know, a lava map, let's say, but the forests might be snowy. And I look down, maybe it's not all painted, and I look down on this and go, what's happening here? Like, this is obviously a massive battle, but why are they all here? Why would they be fighting? If I can't answer that, I don't want to say it bothers me, that's not quite right, but I can't enjoy it and immerse myself in the experience as much as I can if we just write a little bit. And it doesn't have to be complicated. We're not trying to beat Tolkien, you know. It's So I think a good example, Walt, is just last week, you know, at my house, we had the little weekend campaign, The Signal, I called. And I sent it to you, Walt, before we had it. And as we went through the weekend, I mean, firstly, we dropped a game to only play two games. But also, as I went through, I kind of felt the room a little bit and I just did what I thought would maximize the fun.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, okay, where are we? Why are we all here? And that's, I think, I've always found with Kings of War, that's a trickier one, particularly with the big armies, because it's sort of like, these are massive armies.
Yes.
And, you know, we're going at the speed of a peasant, basically. How are we all getting to, and why are we all getting to? That's why I like the Halpies Rift campaign, because they had a, you know, or for example, the latest Mantic campaign, they had a reason. They were all fighting in the Northern Alliance. So that's very important to me, I think. Yeah. So why are these huge armies here, or even small armies? You know, ambush forces, why are we all here? What are we fighting over? What do we want to get out of it? And then to me, the action, that stuff, it's all set up. And I often think of like professional wrestlers or something. You have these very over the top storylines of reasons why they keep getting in that ring and beating seven bells out of each other kind of thing.
Spot on. Yeah.
But the, you've always got to have another, there's always got to be another battle coming. You know, it's not a, that battle in itself, it's a, it's, as you said, it's a journey, right? It's a continuing, it's an endlessly evolving story as much as you want it to.
Yeah.
But also I feel like the actual, storytelling happens in the game as you play the game. So everything else is setting it up and gluing this story together.
That's a great point. Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's the dice and the tactics that decide what happened.
Yes.
And then you can sit there at the end of the game. Okay. What happened? What actually happened? And you can talk about it with your opponent, which I always really enjoy.
Yeah. And, you know, and when that happens, what you just described, there are no winners and losers. Even if you lost, you had fun. Yeah.
We told the story. We didn't win or lose. We told the story. That's exactly right. Yeah.
So both, but, you know, not just one side has a great time. Both sides have a great time. Yeah.
I find it really weird nowadays that it's this two friends sit down at a table and one of them won and one of them lost. To me, that just sounds, that doesn't make any sense to me in the slightest. It's you've both got to have a lovely old time, right? Only one of you can win or can win, quote unquote win, but you've both got to have fun, surely. Unless you're the baby seal clubber. What are they, clubs?
Clubs.
Yeah,
the clubs. Well done. You know, well, hey, look, in tournaments, it's a different scenario, right? That's tournament game, right? There we're trying to find out who the best player is, and that's totally valid. It's all good, you know? But for social games, you don't need to club each other to death.
Well, it might happen once, and then you don't call them again, right?
Correct. That's correct.
So it's, as you said earlier in the pod, you find out very quickly, and actually I'm going to start thinking of people in these four categories because I think it makes a lot of sense. No, I think it makes an awful lot of sense. So when I meet someone, I'll be, you're a diamond.
I hope your wife will understand when you say that, but never mind.
She is a diamond, bloody hell. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, she is absolutely a diamond. I really like that, Walt. And that was a, you know, most people that come on the pod don't put that level of preparation into their answers. That was
just something I read, you know.
So interesting. No, so interesting. Fantastic. And so this is an interesting question. So let's think about this. So dear listeners, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are listening who play Kings of War, play Firefight, whatever, who enjoy the game. It's a very, very good, you know, it's a very balanced game and all the rest of it we talk about a lot. But I'm sure there's a lot of people who would be interested to put this narrative layer on top, because that's sort of what we're talking about, right? Well, if you agree with that.
That's right.
It's an extra thing we do. And maybe it means you spend more time painting or whatever, but I feel like it's an extra layer we have to put into it. I can imagine people actually being quite nervous to do this because, you know, if you write a little story, you are putting yourself out there a little bit, as in, I don't want to feel embarrassed by this. Is there anything we can speak to about that? Well, other than, don't worry about it. Just do it.
Yeah. Look, I think everybody is a story writer. Yeah. And let's face it, the only advice I have is, who are you writing this story for? You're writing it for yourself. Yeah. Okay. That's it. Yeah. If somebody else happens to see it and go, that's great.
Yeah. Yourself and your mate.
And your mate. Yeah. Then do more of it. Right. Okay. But you're not trying to be, you know, is it Ben Stoddard? Is it Ben? Ben?
Yes. Ben. Stoddard? Yes. Yeah? Yes.
You're not trying to be Ben, right? He's great. Right. Okay. You're not trying to do that. So, look, where do I start when I want to do a narrative game? I start with the figures that I like, you know. I'll see a figure that I like and go, wow, isn't that stunning, right? And then I'll build a story around them because the figure will build that story. I won't have to think about it too much.
So your imagination gets sparked by that.
Yeah, or sometimes I'll pick up a book, right, you know, Drowning Secrets. I'll read Drowning Secrets, you know, and there's something in there that resonates with me. I like a piece there in that story, and then I'll go, you know what, I'm going to use that story, and they're going to find miniatures to do that. So that's how I start with those things.
So something that just inspires your imagination, basically,
yeah,
right?
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Don't be too critical of yourself. You know, write it for yourself, because that's it. That's all you're doing.
If you think it's cool and fun, there's a very good chance other people will, right? Because we all like, we've got the same hobby, right? We're all
absolutely,
you know, cut from a similar cloth.
I had a game last week, you know, and it was the typical, you know, what was it, 1,200 points. Kings of War armies came onto the table. It was a push scenario, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there were some really funny dice rolls there, you know, where the impossible happened. And all of a sudden you could see people starting to imagine a story about, you know, how this hero held up these two regiments, you know, for three turns. How is that possible? Out of that emerged a story. And I could see people loved the story, yeah.
So it comes out of the dice. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, it can let come out of the dice, come out of all sorts of things. Yeah.
Let the dice, yeah, absolutely. Let the dice tell the story. And so how big should a narrative game be? And should it be balanced?
Yeah,
right? The game be balanced?
Right. So this is my take on it. You can be it can be as big as you want it to be, right? But if I'm going to be honest, narrative gaming lends itself really to skirmish gaming. Yeah. Or else it gets bigger than Ben-Hur. So if you want to do narrative gaming, you can lead up to large battles, but typically it'll be skirmish gaming up to that point. Balance doesn't, for me, as a narrative player, doesn't come into it. Many legends are created out of things like The Last Stand or A Lucky Escape or The Message Got Through. Yeah. So, you know, if you're facing a 1,500 point army, and you've got 200 and you held out for three turns and the message got through, guess what? Well done.
To me, well, the key is communication with your opponent or the person you're playing with, and just making sure you're on the same page with stuff like that, right? As you both want the same thing from the game. Because as you say, if you're playing with a competitive player, they might not want to do that, or it might get a little bit strange, you know, if they've got only 500 points and you've got 1,000 points, and you may get yourself into difficult situations somehow. So I think just communicate with them ahead of time as to what you're looking to get out of this game or this experience.
To be honest, if you're going to game narratively, get both of you to work on the storyline.
Yeah, totally. And that's all the more exciting, to be quite honest. So you could do the narrative for your army, they could do the narrative for their army, and then, of course, it's how those two things collide with each other. Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right. It's much easier to write narrative for a war band, a skirmish force, because then you can really lean into the characters. Mm-hmm. But I think Kings of War, you can still do it. I mean, you can focus on, for example, my EOD, I focus on my Pharaoh, mm-hmm. who's this confused bloke that was tricked into going to sleep for a really long time, and he's kind of woken up and he's inhaling these he's burning these purple flowers and inhaling what comes off, and he's I don't think of him necessarily as evil. He's just sort of a bit of a patsy, really. He doesn't understand what's happening, that his kingdom is long destroyed, and he doesn't really follow. So
you can
definitely still, you know, you have to maybe zoom out a little bit for a lot of the army, if you know, and there are hundreds and hundreds of troops.
But you know, right? the beauty of Mantic, you know, fantasy gaming, is there's ambush, right? That was the idea behind ambush, right?
Yeah.
Smaller scale, introductory, yeah. And let's not forget there's Vanguard as well. So
it's coming back this year. I'm looking forward to it too. I was always one of the people that made fun of Vanguard, but now actually I hope it's crunchy narrative, your guy loses a leg, you can go to the model, chop his leg off and put a little wooden leg on him, or so. Do you know what I mean? I'm actually really interested.
That's very extreme.
Yeah, but why not, you know? Why not? Yep. Yeah, exactly. Because we've got ambush, we've got dead zone. So if I wanted a nice, lovely, clean, quick game, which by the way I very much do, I've got that. I feel I'm already served for that. So why not? Let's have a deep fantasy system where I can get a headache and get paralysis of what I'm doing, and hopefully not too many tokens, not movement, you know, not view arcs for individual models, I'm hoping. But why not? Let's tell some crazy stories. So I think in terms of Should it be balanced? I mean, really, you can do. I mean, I tend to do whenever I do a narrative game like the weekend we just had, dear listener, I always make it balanced. You know, we all had 750 points, or bring what you like. Don't bring something to kick people's teeth in, but you know, within I think there was just one rule, and that was the plague faction had to be led by a plague general, because that was the character in the story. But other than that, it was, you know, just fill your boots, and we're all trying to win a relatively fair game when the game starts, you know. Yeah. But you can lean into it as much as you want, you and your opponent want.
Yeah.
Right,
it just depends on the victory conditions, right?
Exactly as you say. Well, if you've got, you know, 20% less force total than your opponent, you're not expecting it to be, you're not expecting the win condition necessarily to be fair, right? It's you can balance that however you want to, just to have Great. Fun. Yes. And then you can always adjust for the next game, you know.
Yep, that's right.
Super. So how big should, sorry, we've done that. So what motivates a narrative gamer? Is it the same as things as a tournament player?
Oh, what motivates? Look, no, it's not the same. Look, it's the experience, right? Yeah. So for the narrative gamer, it's the experience. For a tournament player, it's the win, the position, whatever it is, right? So I wrote a short story for a scenario coming up for my Scar Orcs, right? Okay. And I'll just use this as an example, yeah, about, you know, what motivates a narrative gamer. So you ready for this? It'll take 10 seconds. So this thing's called Rearguard Action, right? Right. The Iron Orcs were coming, and although he couldn't see them, he knew they were there. Their stink on the breeze was a dead giveaway, and by all reckoning, they would cross the salt pans in the next few hours, give or take. Sooner would be better, murmured Ox under his breath, knowing that his heavy regiment of skull axes were just itching to make someone pay for all the waiting they had to endure over the last couple of days. The war chief made the sound of a dust snake, signaling the smaller orklings to move to their forward hidden positions in the salt pans. The Iron Orcs were blunderers when it came to moving silently, but they weren't stupid. They would send out their scouts to reconnoitre the open ground first, and they needed to be taken care of. Okay.
Beautiful.
So there you go. I wrote that. So now that, right, is the setting for a game. So what is win? What is lose? Yeah. If these guys can hold them up in the salt pans for three turns, well, guess what? You know, the rest of the Scar Orcs have managed to get through the passes. Good on them, right? If they actually manage to obliterate the Iron Orcs, well, all of them need a promotion, you know? So, and if they get wiped out, well, you know, to the orc god, Zork, you know, many, many fire pyres will be burnt. So it's not about winning, losing. For a narrative player, it's really how that game is played. So that is what motivates a narrative gamer, I reckon.
And I'm just imagining that from the opponent's point of view of, okay, well, maybe I'm a Basilian player and the orcs are coming through the salt flats, and it's kind of, okay, this sounds catastrophic. You know, this is the very, very scary guys coming our way. What does, you know, what might defeat look like? What might victory look like? What might something in between look like? Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. And it's it can be literally and often is just a couple of sentences. That's, you know, we're not talking about writing a novel here.
Well, that was three paragraphs, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's very trope, but nonetheless, it's fun.
Oh, 100%. You're just doing it with your friends, right? We don't have to go to a writing course, a novel writing course to do this. We're just doing it for, as we've said, right? We're doing this for ourselves. We're doing it for fun, you know, and it's whatever we come up with is, for me, it's more interesting than not having anything, right? It's great. I absolutely love this stuff. And what? So this is a good question. Are you drawn to particular types of games? Why are they good for narrative gaming?
Look, I'm mostly skirmish games these days. Yeah, which, if need be, I can quickly couple together to form a campaign. Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. They don't take much time to play. They use very few figures. And because I've got a 3D printer, you know, that sort of like really sort of like pushes me in terms of making some cool terrain. So that's good. I love that bit.
Oh, well, I completely agree with you. As a narrative gamer, I've also got a printer. And yeah. I remember when I was playing, for example, when I started playing the Walking Dead, Mantic's Walking Dead game, I was playing it with a cricket pavilion as terrain because that's what I had, right? Yeah. So I had this cricket pavilion because I have a cricket pavilion. That's, you've got to use what you've got. Yeah. Whereas, of course, with a 3D printer, you can really think ahead of a game. You can think, okay, what do I want the table to look like? Where are we? Yeah. And you can, of course, just tailor this very cheaply to exactly what you want.
And there's a lot of great stuff out there. There's a lot of great stuff out there now.
But even 10 years ago, this would have seemed like sorcery. What, a 3D printer?
Yeah.
What? This is absolutely mad.
Yeah,
and as you say, I mean, there's people all over the world making incredible content. You can buy the files for, you know, usually very cheap, right?
It's,
fantastic and super. And as a narrative gamer, what are your thoughts about, there's too many armies in Kings of War, you should delete some?
Hot topic, I think. Yeah, look, personal view, this one puzzles me a little bit, right? And I'm going to be a little bit controversial, so please forgive me, those people who don't agree, send all messages to Chris.
I enjoy it immensely. That's why we do the podcast, upsetting people. Definitely.
Look, I'm not going to be that controversial. Look, there are many players that are playing Mantic games, yeah, that are probably like me. They have existing armies, they've had them for a while. And the signs of a narrative player, by the way, is that you never throw an army away, right? You don't get rid of an army, because if you're a narrative player, you've invested too much time, too much storytelling and legend making into it. So they're just waiting for the right game system to come along.
Yeah.
And for me, that was Kings of War, by the way. Many players like me have come across to Kings of War and the selection of armies in Kings of War, it's great. It really is. There's a great selection of it. But now somebody wants to slim them down. So I would first of all say, why? And then I'd ask, who? Who's pushing this? So if it's the clubs people, right, the people walking around with clubs, yeah, because they want to streamline things so they can only have to size up 14 armies instead of 22 that they have to play against, I'd say to them, look, guys, they're only flavors. They really are. They're just flavors, right? So you already know that each army in the end has similar structure. The names are different. Yes, they do have specific army rules. But you guys are good tournament players. You can cope with this, right? Just consider it a challenge. So if we're talking about the rules committee, on the other hand, having to manage and update lots of armies, I would say, look, if that's really a bother, just do the minimum, the generic armies. Just do the minimum, right? Yeah, because they are generic. It's all good. It's cool. And if we're talking about streamlining armies to consolidate IP, I'm going to be really contentious here. I'd point to another games company in Nottingham, yeah, and say, don't abandon the players, yeah, that came to you, all right? And I, having, you know, met Ronnie and all that sort of stuff, that's not Mantic. That's not the way they come across to me. Yeah, and so I'm very hopeful that all those armies will stay there. I think they're good for the game.
Ah, this is interesting. It's very common to talk about, and I've done it myself many times. Talk about, oh come on, there's 29 armies. Surely that's too many to service. I mean, it's worked for the rules committee to keep it balanced. I think from my perspective, if you have 29 armies, the only reason one of the reasons I think it could be trimmed down, and maybe that would be an advantage, is I think if you have that many armies with so many units which are in several of the different buckets, you know, there's a worry that the armies can feel generic or feel there's not much difference between them. That's a criticism that people have had against Kings of War, is that the armies can all do the same things. Now, it's not true, to be quite honest with you. And I think they're working hard to differentiate them. And I think it should be that way. I don't think, you know, as a narrative gamer, I think if you're a dwarf player, you shouldn't have, you know, super fast cavalry or something like that. To me, it's, you know, and being a part of a big part of the game is mitigating for the weaknesses of your army.
Correct.
You know, you'll have incredible strengths, but also weaknesses that you have. And that's, again, that's why really I don't like allies in tournaments.
And as a narrative player, I would make the point that, you know, if I wanted to do a Kingdoms of Men army, which is quite generic, it gives me a lot of scope to customize my army, right? To build a storyline around them. Honestly, you know, it could be a peasant army that's totally useless. But in a narrative sense, it's an army that's fun to play. So if you blow Kingdoms of Men away, then all of a sudden, you know, the universe, magic universe, just got smaller, right? And let's face it, there's a company out there that blew a lot of races away, right? And I don't see there's any benefit to that. I really don't.
This is Ronnie Renton, and you are listening to the Mantic Universe podcast.
It's interesting you mentioned that, actually, Walt, because a point you made a couple of sentences ago. So when you see a Basilian army in Kings of War, it tends to be the really high impact stuff. So you'll get loads of angels, loads of palace ogres and these kinds of things. But actually, if you read the lore, most of the Basilian armies are local people kind of abandoned, actually, by the slightly corrupt and shiftless capital city. So imagine Byzantium or something like this, with these, you know, incredible ornate rich cities and towers, and it's beautiful and lovely vistas, but they're run by, you know, so a cabal of corrupt families. So the people, so most Basilian armies are more likely to be the local farmers who go, geez, there's no help coming. We just have to, you know, band together as much as whatever we can scrape together to try and defend ourselves.
And for me, I find the second one more fun to play.
Way more fun to play, much more interesting.
Tournament, different, right? Yeah. But, yeah, for social gaming at home, you know, narrative gaming, the second one is a lot more exciting, I find.
Do we think – so there's loads of overlap, right? So a player could have – someone listening, they could have their, conceivably they could have their tournament army, which is competitive, and they could have their narrative army, right? They could have the angels, you know, whatever is the competitive army, and then they could have their army of peasants led by the local lord, who, you know, and but to me, that, as you said, that second army is way more exciting. I can just imagine them, just local people clubbing together, and then, you know, you can get out your map of Panathor and go, okay, we're here, you know, we're kind of near the rift, and, you know, they keep getting incursions of the abyss, or they're over here, and that's why there's loads of orcs. And I can just imagine, you know, those that paragraph you read, I can just imagine, okay, we're near the salt flats, and we know the orcs, these nasty iron orcs are coming. You know, we just have to scrape together whatever it is we can. Maybe there is help coming. You know, maybe there is, but we have to hold on until they get here. Or, you know, it's just and suddenly, well, that's all this is, right? It's just sparking ideas off each other. And
absolutely,
we're doing it. We're doing it. Yeah, super, brilliant. So, yeah, and I always love to talk to Mark, because it's very fashionable to say, and I may have, apologies, dear listener, I may have actually said this already, but very fashionable to say, there's too many armies in the game. You talk to Mark, and he's like, well, why would we get rid of any of the armies? It's great. It's not my problem they have to balance the rules. That's on them, you know? They created halflings. They didn't have to do that.
And which one do you want to cut, really? Which one do you want to cut, right? Yeah, cut everybody else's, but not mine, right?
Yeah. Well, no, and actually, well, this is a conversation we've had. I mean, I think genuinely, I think they were going to, and I don't have inside information on this, but I get this that they were planning on getting rid of traditional orcs with Riftforge orcs, replacing them. Yeah. And I remember having that, because you were getting your old, as we said, right? You had an army looking for a rule system. You getting your orcs out of your case, and they've already got so many miles behind them of stories and battles and all the rest of it. And I said to you, I'd probably play them as Riftforge orcs if I'm honest. And you said, well, yes, but that's not the story of my army. This is my army, and I'd rather play a less competitive list and keep this continuity rather than suddenly retconning it and go, oh no, they were forged in the rift.
That's right.
So everything I have previously is no good anymore. Which I totally understand that. So, it would be a tricky one then, because you have so much invested in this army that, of course, you know, Kings of War is a great, and maybe we can talk a little bit about. So if we talk about narrative, mm-hmm. Games Workshop has, you know, 20 years of lore on, you know, and it has so many different stories, novels, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But actually what I really like, particularly with the Warpath universe, but I feel like there's enough lore in Panathor to give you hooks and ideas.
Yep.
But there's not so much that you're boxed into a corner, because I remember I tried to write a little campaign for Age of Sigmar when I was playing that game, for the Games Workshop game. And I wrote, I don't know, something like 12 pages of story. I had this idea that there was this magical city which had been, I can't remember whether it was, basically you couldn't get into it. There was a magic barrier or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And there was two factions of Stormcast Eternals, because we had the two players. And the twist was going to be the people that you think are the good guys have been the bad guys all along. And the kind of slightly Nazi-like other Stormcast Eternals were the good guys, because they mm-hmm. knew that there was this, scam going. You know, we were being tricked, and then there was going to be a big battle at the end. And I was so excited, and I showed the other local guys this, and can we play this out, and just showed them the introductions, and I don't think that the factions would do that.
Yeah, exactly. That
was it, and we never did it, and I was so excited, and I was so disappointed.
Chris, I think you have hit the nail on the head, right? This goes back to also the question of Panathor lore. I sometimes hear this as well, you know. There's not enough of it, right? So I actually think it's very, as you say, right, I think it's very rich in its world development. And the key point that you just made is it's open. It's an open world, right? Yeah. So, you know, there comes a point where lore can actually become too prescriptive, like you say, right? Yeah. And it straitjackets you, right? Because people will, as you say, they'll argue about the armor type, or it's not written in the codex, or it wasn't in the last, those weren't the colors of the uniforms, you know, when they made Planetfall. And, they're not the core troop types. And, you know, these are the mandatory figures that are always there. You know what I'm talking about here, right? Yeah.
I certainly do.
Yeah. And that is why I walked away from GW Tabletop Gaming. It was straitjacketing me, into the next flavor that they wanted to sell me, right? And I didn't want to do that. I want to be able to go move into a world where I can create a story, I can actually go and create a force and put it into that world, and it actually makes sense for it to be there.
And it fits, and it's yours.
Yeah, and Panathor and the Panathor lore and the books that are written allows that to happen. I think the Panathor lore is actually quite strong. And for those people who say there's not enough of it, okay, hey, have you read all the books? Have you, go out there?
Yeah. I always ask people that say that, the lore's rubbish or it's not there. And I said, have you read the lore in the big green book, the third edition rule book? And the answer is almost always no. No, I haven't.
Right.
It's people haven't taken what's there. You know, it's all on the Mantic website for free. I think it's a little bit hidden away, if I'm honest. But it's there. It's all there for free. You can read it all for free. Yeah. And,
I think it's very rich. And it's an open world. It's developing. And I know that Ronnie, for instance, with the Northern Alliance, he wanted the community to be involved in that. And I think it's great. I really do.
Yeah, me too. I often think, I don't have an answer for this, Walt, but it's kind of, how can we share these things? Because we're creating, I think as players, we're creating so much richness that at the moment may just stay just ours. You know, we may not share that with anybody. Yeah. And maybe people aren't comfortable sharing it. That's totally fine. But I wonder if maybe that in some way we could all kind of share this together and mix the stories together or the narrative together.
But look, I write background stories for my armies. I've got a couple here. They're no big deal. I'm happy to share them with the podcast. You know, you guys can put them up on your resources. And if people want to know what does the background story look like and how hard is it to write, fill your boots, right? Yeah. So if that's what you want to do, I'm happy to share. Absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, for The Signal, for example, I mean, for whatever reason, I actually find that writing in the narrative for the sci-fi easier than writing for Panathor. And I think the only reason for that is, as I said earlier, everyone has a spaceship, right? Yeah. But the other thing is, at the end of every campaign, you can just blow up the planet, right? It's there's plenty more planets where that came from, but turns out if you do that in fantasy, people get upset. Well, so
that's a great scenario. You should really put it up. You really should. I think it's
great. Oh, we'll do. Yeah, I'll share it. But it's, again, it's simple. I picked up on something, you know, my favorite short story, which is the Rob Berman's. I picked up on that and just, you know, and actually, by the way, I shared it with Rob Berman, and he very, very much doesn't agree. My story is very much not canon. But I picked up on just a little thing that interested me within the story. Of this idea of this plague general who's who's still got, you know, more of his mind than most, and he's got inside knowledge on the GCPS, etc. I just thought that was interesting, and whatever, you know, as you're listening to this, dear listener, whatever little bits of the story, it may be the League of Rodia, it could be anything, it could be a place, it could be a character, it could be anything that sparks your interest.
Correct.
And then you can just start creating your own lore. You can do whatever the heck you like, but just pick up on something you're interested in and build from there.
And look, if you're not very good at story writing, drink some more beer.
but if you honestly, if you want some help, not that we're experts or anything, but that's not the point of any of this, it's not about being good or bad, it's about having fun. But dear listener, if you're interested if you want some help, basically just reach out on the MUP, either the email or the Facebook group, and we'll be more than willing. And it's fun, right? It's a collaborative thing, and it's we love this stuff too, so it's, you know, talking about your goblin army or whatever it might be is going to be fun for us as well, right? Because it's us exploring them.
Well, there is another game system out there which I subscribe to, and but I won't mention it, but you know, every month they do a writing jam, right, of short stories, right? That's it.
Oh, Mantic do the same thing.
Oh, do they?
I forget what it's called. There's a Facebook group. They do, I think they do it's quarterly, I think. Yeah. It's usually the same people. I think there's a guy in Spain or Spanish speaking.
Check that out. That sounds great.
We'll try and find it, dear listener. I can't remember what the face of it's called. I did submit one short story, but I didn't do any editing. I basically just wrote it in a couple of hours and submitted it. And I definitely should have edited it and done a rewrite and all the rest of it. You have to do as a writer. But no, they have Brian Novak, for example, from the Dead Zone podcast. He's a really good writer. So he almost always wins, I think. Off the top of my head, or certainly seems to from my point of view. But it's a great idea. Obviously Brandon Rossbond is putting out books for Winged Hussar. I need to check if the new novel's on Kindle, because that's just a little bit easier for me. So I'll see that after this call, dear listener. But it's the lore is out there. There's plenty of lore. Yep. Without, as we said, without it being a straitjacket. So, you know, go and buy an old copy of the Green Book. The rules are no longer valid, but all the lore, there's tons and tons of lore for each faction in that. It's absolutely fantastic. Obviously, read the novels, dear listener. If you want it, you know, you can go on the website and read the Green Book lore for free, I think. So there's loads. There's plenty out there, and you can put your own imagination and your own spin on things. Yeah. I just have a fun time. Mm. Super. So what are we working on at the moment?
Okay. I'm converting my rat armies. Yeah. So they're all on unit basing. So they're all being moved across to dioramas. On individual basis, they're being moved to unit basing. I've written a background story for them. Some of them are being repainted. New unit structures to fit in with Kings of War and Ambush, banners, really exciting. I'm creating more 3D terrain for those guys as well. And I'm not sure, I think I might have mentioned this to you, there was the storyline in Drowning Secrets about this Basilian monastery, right, where the holy nuns, or not so holy, you know, won't give anything away there, and the forces of nature, right? Yeah, I want to create that terrain and have that battle, right? I want to recreate that. So
there was, I think there was the abbey, there was the town, there was the forest. Right.
So I'm going to be buying some Basilians pretty soon, or Basilians. I'm not sure what the right pronunciation is.
No one is. Well, you're fine. You're doing well.
Okay.
You've hit the two main ones.
Okay, excellent. And look, the only other thing is Clash of Kings UK has really given me a lot of energy to visit some more tournaments. I mean, they're not my hot button thing, but Clash of Kings really was, in the UK, was top notch.
But even the word tournament, it implies competition, and that's not really one.
It was competition.
Gaming,
there was more
gaming
to it
day
than that.
Here a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I've actually signed up for, and this is a plug for Clash of Kings here in Australia in January. So Clash of Kings Australia 24, and I'm going to be taking my Scar Orcs, right? Not Riftforged Orcs, like you say. Yeah, they're not optimized. Yeah. For tournament play, but they're going to have a go and they're going to try and smack somebody. So,
but to be fair, I mean, people have been saying orcs are no good for years, and it was a few years ago now, but I think it was Eric Trowbridge or something in the US won the US Masters with orcs.
Right.
So, you know, again, you know, I think a lot of the times people have these conversations and people say, oh, an army is no good. Well, they're plenty good for us. I mean, you know, it's just maybe at the high levels, maybe that's the case, but we're not at the high levels, dear listener. 99% of people that play the game aren't at a high enough level to worry about those things, I suspect, you know.
So I'll be interested to see how Clash of Kings Australia measures up to Nottingham. Yeah, it's a tall order. I'm hopeful. Yeah, I'm certainly going there to have a great time. So, hey, my big event for 2024 is going to be Clash of Kings, and I need to figure out what I'm going to do about that, because that's not far away. So I bought the ticket, and I can't wait.
Comes around fast, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. And what will you be willing to come back on the pod to tell us about your experiences at Clash of Kings Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, more than happy to. But it depends on the feedback you get to this particular podcast.
No.
If all those clubs come out.
It's that old joke where, was it on The Office or something, where he gets to talk about the complaints department and then gets the rubbish bin.
The complaints department.
No, yeah. it's been a fascinating chat, Walt. And,
look, it's been a lot of fun, yeah.
Do you know how many players you've got for Clash of Kings Australia?
I should know, but around 60, 64, somewhere like that.
I think
aiming for. Yeah, so it's a fair number.
Yeah.
I could be wrong there, but I think the last Facebook there, I think that was the number kicking around in my head.
If we're wrong, somebody in Australia, please ring in. Message Clem and let us know. He's no longer on Facebook because he's upset with them breaking EU law, which is fair enough, you know.
Yeah.
Super. And, well, sorry, you mentioned your rats briefly there. Obviously, you're not taking them to cut, but you're working on them. And you mentioned you'd written a little bit of law. Is this new law or is it kind of continuation of the existing law for them?
No, it's new. It's new.
Ooh.
No, so this is new. So this is really about, look, they came out of the Warhammer world. I mean, these are the original rats in metal, right? Yeah. But I have tried my best to get away from the clan names. I've created my own. This is new. Yeah. And so they're being Kings of Warized, if that's a word. I don't know.
It is now.
It is now. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Really exciting.
Yeah, so it's Legion Infestus, the Black Death.
What does it say? And you've very kindly sent me a little bit of him. Actually, I've got it.
Well, you need to read it, Chris. But not tonight.
Yeah.
This morning.
Fantastic. But and I'm working on my Twilight Kin, which is the army I'll be taking to Clash of Kings.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I stayed up way too late last night just painting a little boat, but not quite. Actually, I'm not quite happy with it, so I'm going to spend a little bit more time on it. But I want this, as I said it a few times on the pod now, I want my Twilight Kin army to be maybe 20% better painted than any of my other armies, except for that one I won in the competition once. So, so I want it to be my the best looking army I've put on the table, and I bring it to Clash of Kings UK and lose some games. But
I've set myself a little challenge. I really do. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah. I'll send you some photos. I'm really happy with it so far.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying doing it, just trying to be a little bit better, thinking a lot more about light and things like that. And last night I painted. Again, I go in these big circles. I've started trying non-metallic metals. So I've painted three Rift Forgers for my Rift Forge orcs in non-metallic metal. And it's a lot of blood, sweat and tears, but it's not, it's not complicated. It's just I keep kind of doing a bit and then undoing it and then redoing it. So I'm going in these big loops. Yeah. But blow me, they don't look bad, actually. I mean, it's... if I compare it to the professionals online, it looks terrible, but it does trick my eye into thinking that looks like gold armor
when it's not.
It's browns, right, and yellows, etc. So, I had a go at my, I actually got my Ekta model off the shelf, who is a Germanic Trident Realm hero. I got him off, which is a model actually previously. It was probably one of my better painted models. And last night I basically just completely repainted him. There's going to be a lot of that going on where I just go back over my existing army. So I'll do my Twilight Kin. And then once I've done that, and for me, I'm going at a slow old clip, but I'm pretty close to having 750 points of ambush ready. And then after that, I'm just going to go back to my Empire of Dust and my Riftforge Orcs and just put a bit more love into them.
Yeah.
And, because I took my EOD to Empire of Dust to Clash of Kings last year. From a distance, it looks fine. But I was rushing to get it done, and, some of the paint ran and all the rest of it, right? So, I just want to get those three armies looking a bit nice, those armies looking a little bit nicer.
Yeah.
And then I just want to enjoy them a bit more and put a, some games and tell some stories with them.
Yeah, there's a lot of enjoyment in revisiting your armies. There really is. Yeah, there really is. You just go, oh, wow, So, yeah, fantastic. I need to tell you, I know this sounds very weird, right, but I'm looking at a box of Death Zone up there on my shelf, and two boxes of Firefight. So I'm getting the sci-fi itch, okay?
Yes.
So
perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Which factions do you fancy for the sci-fi?
I think I'm going to be totally boring here. I think it'll be Maison Labs.
That's not boring. That's a very good choice. That's not boring at all. Yeah, that's a great
storyline around Maison Labs. I find excellent.
It's one of my favourites in any game. Honestly, I love it. Absolutely love it.
So, can you please explain to me who the Nameless are? I keep hearing this word Nameless.
Yes. So, the difficulty is they don't have any hard plastics. So they were a faction within so Mantic Maid. So you know like Dungeon Saga, right? A dungeon crawler, a classic dungeon crawler. They made exactly the same thing, but in their sci-fi Warpath universe called Star Saga. And within Star Saga, one of the expansions, it was on the Kickstarter, so one of the expansions was fighting against the Nameless. And that's why you've sort of heard of it and sort of not, because it's quite hard to get the models. That's really the only way you can sort of get the model is through these Star Saga bundles. You can see them on some gamer websites, but they've been out of print, I think, for a long time. It's hard to get them. The models are PVC, they're board game pieces. Mm-hmm. But once you've got them painted up, they look nice, to be honest. They are basic, they are what they are, but they for what they are, they're good. So the Nameless are a sort of race. They're lots of different races of kind of weirdo underwater factions. So they're a sort of a confederation of different species who were all together, and they were very peaceful, and the GCPS sort of turned up, and I kind of imagine sci-fi kind of almost bootleggers. It's I think of the Spanish and the explorers, you know, in the 1600s when they would turn up. When they would turn up to, you know, Central America, we would say, right? And you know, the what motivates these people is you know, these aren't necessarily the best people in the world, right? And so, you know, these kind of conquistador type GCPS guys turn up and say, "You're now in the GCPS, good for you, you're very lucky to be here." And the Nameless were sort of like, even though they're sort of undersea Cthulhu monsters, they were kind of cool about it. They weren't particularly bothered. They were like, "Yeah, that sounds fine, just, you know, kind of leave us alone if you don't mind." And basically the GCPS came to some agreement with them, but then the GCPS is the GCPS, and of course, as time went on, they were trying to change the deal, you know, to just sort of make it worse. They're trying to exploit, as they always do. That's the whole thing, right? Is just consuming and exploiting and all the rest of it. We have to be very careful to stay away about talking about politics, right? Well, but that's it's sort of a parody. I think of Warpath as being like a very violent kind of 1980s cartoon, almost, with these very sort of hyper characters and all the rest of it. But the Nameless have started fighting back. I think there's also talk of a religion, or like a new religion, almost like religious zealots. So for example, maybe you think about the Jewish zealots fighting back against the Roman oppression or something like that. Yes, but yeah, weird OC monsters. I think they're great. I think it's the reason I think they're not in Firefight yet is it's just a real headache to get that many species in plastic sprues.
Yeah, of course.
And make sure it sells.
Exciting times. So.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Chris, how long is a MUP short supposed to be? I'm just looking at the time on this.
Well, we keep it very flexible. It could be 20 minutes if I'm on more. But no, it's just a...
I do apologise. Obviously, I was...
No, not at all. It's, as long as we're having a lovely old time talking about this stuff, it's going in the episode. That's no, absolutely. Before, dear listener, before we started recording, Walt asked me how much time I had, and I said, I've definitely got 2 hours. Walt looked at me like, "Are you crazy? We're not talking for 2 hours." But it gets up there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure
very
does.
Easy to do.
Yeah.
So, dear listener, if you're interested in narrative and you're a little bit nervous, just reach out to us. There's literally no wrong answers with this stuff. You know, we all just want more fun, more games, all the rest of it, more of this stuff we love. And we're very, very happy to if you want feedback. I mean, for example, with the Signal, I messaged Rob Berman before. You know, maybe I shouldn't mention that on the pod because then loads of people will message Rob Berman. But you know, it's totally normal just to reach out to somebody else and see what you think about it. And obviously, well, before we had the campaign, I sent it to you and just said, don't share this with anyone, but here's the little campaign. So if you're interested in this stuff, I'd really encourage you to do it, because if you think it sounds cool, I'm certain you'll get a lot out of it, and it can be as much, you can put into it as much or as little as you like. And you know, even if it's a couple of sentences before a game, and I always think when we start a game of Kings of War now, I always just think, or whatever it might be, right, where are we and why are we fighting each other? It's not just, right, you've got rats, I've got orcs, let's bash the heck out of each other. It's okay, well, you know, what and it's a little bit of fun. And if your opponent goes, "Oh yeah," you know, and gets excited by you asking the question, "Why are we fighting today?" Then you go, "Huh, yeah, I've not found another spade."
You're not going to forget that, are you?
No. It's because it's really good. It's really, really good. There we go. Yeah.
Chris, I've had a ball. I really appreciate it. Thank you. I think it's an interesting topic, and I hope this is a start of a conversation by other people as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and I could, to be honest, I could imagine us doing an ongoing MUP Shorts of what's happening with the stories of our armies, or, you know, bringing new people in, or it can be, we can do whatever the heck we want. I mean, we love this stuff, right? So let's do more of it and talk more about it. And yeah, to me, it's maybe because I'm a heart, but I love sharing this stuff with other people. It's not just, you know, it's not just writing in my diary and that's where it ends. It's I want to get this out there, you know, and share it with other people, and for other people to be a part of the story, because it's not just in isolation, right? We can all do this. Super. And well, I'm very much looking forward to your coverage of you winning Clash of Kings. I think there's I've forgotten the name of the chap now. There's one guy in Oz who is really, really good.
I think there's quite a few players.
Apologies, dear listener. I've completely forgotten his name now. But I think there's one chap who has quite a distinct style where he keeps units very cheap and tends to have lots of units. Yeah. And he seems, he's been on loads of episodes of Counter Charge, etc. He seems like a really, really nice bloke. You know, very down to earth guy. But he's, I think he's one of the best players in, you know, in the world. And it'd be really interesting if you bump into him and have a little chat with him, because I think he keeps units very, very cheap. So he's just very efficient, but it seems like he just wins all the time. You know, it's very interesting to, because it's that's a completely different, you know, that's as we were talking earlier about different types of gamers. But I just wonder, does he have stories with his armies? You know,
yeah, it'll be interesting. If he's there, I'll see if I can catch up with him. See how we go.
Yeah, that would be great. Well.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for joining me for this not so short.
Look, it's time to go to bed now. I need my beauty sleep.
Yes, we were, dear listener, we were having a conversation before we started about who has more grey in their beard. And unfortunately, it's me. So, yeah, you've got more grey up top, Walt, but there's more. I've got more white in my beard. That's for sure. More of a Santa beard. Okay. I need the Christmas trim. I don't want the Santa comparisons. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, mate. Yeah. See you, Chris. Bye-bye.
Thanks, dear listener.